You're listening to the Love is Black podcast.
We're the host of Fly.
The love is dope.
And the conversation's always 100.
Welcome back to your favorite podcast. It is Harvey, and I'm here.
Start over.
I start over?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to start over. I don't like doing that.
Harvey, can you just...
Start over? Okay. Welcome to your favorite podcast. I'm Harvey, and this is Love is Black. Who are you?
That was not how
it was different.
It.
I it's like to very keep, different. I like to shake it up. I keep you on your toes. How about
you're
that?
You're not keeping anybody on their
I
toes.
I am. You on your toes right now.
All you're doing is
you're like you
it
ballet.
Up.
Like you've never done this before.
You're messing
like,
up the flow.
The flow is fresh and new, baby.
Okay, I'm Carice.
I'm still Harvey.
Oh, look at us getting back into the normal flow.
But it's different now. People are like, oh my goodness, what happened? You
people are
it.
Wondering what happened, but they're probably wondering about you. You hit your head.
Wow.
Are you okay?
Thanks, love. Appreciate that. You're the best.
You know what happened to me today?
What happened to you today?
I got my teeth cleaned.
Yay! I didn't want to say anything, but
wow. What are you trying to say?
That it was time. It's just your regular 3, 4, 6 months, whatever.
Wow.
And baby, not that you wasn't fine before, but now unstoppable. Unstoppable.
Okay, so we will have a conversation post-recording because I don't appreciate your tone.
All right. Aside from the beautiful woman with the sparkling teeth next to me.
We were having a good day prior to this.
Okay. Can I do this? You know what? All right. So this season has been love, black love, and we're continuing with that. And I've been searching for couples to talk to. And I found another one.
Are you DJ Khaled?
Am I? Oh my God. You just played yourself. No. So I was looking through and they have a podcast like us. The podcast is called The Business of Marriage. We introduce Sam and Tova Jones to the podcast. Welcome. How you guys doing today?
What's happening?
We are so good. When she said, are you DJ Khaled? We over here talking about another one.
Major key.
Another one.
It's a major key.
She's the joker of the group. So well done, baby. Look at you.
That is
injecting a little humor already. Well done.
Already. Oh, well my goodness. Done. Well, thank you guys for doing this podcast, for sharing your love story. We are looking forward to it. I'm very excited.
Yeah, so we are too.
For sure.
Let's jump right in. Where did you two meet? How does your love story begin?
Tova Jane?
Listen, you guys. So we are in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So we're in Michigan, y'all. Known to be super cold, but right now it's nice. It's in the 80s. And I moved here originally from the east side of the state to go to school. And while I was there, I met this guy who was a football player. And funny story, we were on the bus. So here they had like one grocery store that all the kids went to. It was a bus. And he was on there. And I had like two bags. And he was like, hey, can I help you with your bags? And I'm looking like, number one, I don't really know you. Number two, I only have two bags. Like I can carry my own bags. And he was like, oh, don't tell me you this independent woman. You don't need no man, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, I just have two bags. I can do it on my own. And so I got off the bus and I didn't see him for like another, 7, 8 years?
That's right, because you rejected the best thing that was about to happen.
Oh, really?
The best thing. No, but you know, it was funny because in it, I saw an opportunity for me to just like, hey, I can help. You know, she looked very amazing, you know, I was like, yo, I would just say, hey, and in that moment, I felt so rejected. I was like, yo, I can't like just pick up a bag and just help you. But the truth was she had somebody waiting on her already.
Listen.
That's what was really going
so
on.
Listen, we weren't gonna share that part, but the truth was, I had another man's at the crib, and you know, it was college love, young love, puppy love. So listen, I don't even remember his name. So, so that's what, you know, that was the reason why too, but it really was. I only had two bags. I can manage. But about 7-8 years later, I joined a church that his brother attended, and unbeknownst to me, his brother kept telling him, like, Sam, it's this girl at my church who I think you need to talk to. And he would, Sam was like, well, what's her name? And he was like, it's Tova. And Sam was like, oh, that girl that rejected me on the bus, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, no, I'm good. I didn't know none of this was happening. And then one day, like, we had like a choir musical, and he was in the audience, and I seen him. I was like, oh, there goes Sam. He was there with another young lady, and he noticed me. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, and then that was really history, because in that moment, like, you know, when you, and I think this is part of our love story too, is there were these moments where you go in and out of relationships, you get to know young ladies and get to know guys, mm-hmm. and you kind of find people like, this is not what I want. This is not what I desire.
Yeah.
And in that moment, like, of, I think for me, it had been a year since I was dating anybody. And so I got a chance to kind of declutter the mess and get my thoughts clear and kind of figure out what I really wanted for myself, which is very important in relationships, but also what I really wanted for the next thing. And the next thing for me was marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was looking for a wife. And it was so funny, in that choir stand, I saw this, you know, she was like decked out, got the robe on, you know, red robe on, singing, you know, Jesus loves me, you know, singing all the songs, you know, and all the things, and having, and it was great. And I was like, man, she just shining like an angel. And in that moment, it was like the person that was with me, we worked together. We just happened to go together to this event. And she was like, yo, that's Tova. I'm like, oh yeah, that is Tova. And in that moment, it was almost like, I want to ask her out. And it's so funny, during that time, I also was very shy. And being very shy, you know, I was like, I don't know if I want to step up. But in that moment, she was really the first girl in my entire dating history that I was like, I'm going to step up and just inbox her, you know, because Facebook is hot right now. Facebook's hot, you know, so we get on the Facebook, you know, get the messenger going, you know, type, you know, you put coffee signals and everything, you know, bat signals, like, bat signal, hey, what you doing?
Goodness.
You know, and so, you know, I get an opportunity to just, you know, say, hey, and I inboxed her, and then she said yes. But that's where it didn't stop there, because where to go from there, Ms. Jones?
Yeah, so even though I said yes, I did not want to date anybody. Like, I was moving to Baltimore. I had family down there. I was going to make some career moves. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I'm going to just throw out a date that I don't think you're available. So I was like, oh, the only day I got available is Monday.
Who goes on a date on a Monday?
He was like perfect. Yeah, that's my day off. That's, I was me. Like, oh,
it was like,
goodness.
it was like orchestrated.
I was like, what? He was like, that's my only day off this week. Perfect. I'm like, okay, God, I see what you're doing here. You're trying to finagle something. So I had this thing. I told my friend, I said, hey, this guy asked me out. I was like, I got time for a coffee. We didn't do no dinner date, no movie. We went to a coffee shop. And I was like, if he's 1 minute late, I'm not going in. I'm looking for all excuses, y'all. I'm not trying to do this again with this
young man. And when did I walk in?
You were like 5 minutes early, because I went like 10 minutes early, and he was 5 minutes early. And I sat in the car to the very last minute. He was looking around like, she ain't gonna come. He was nervous. He was sweating. And I finally walked in, and I was laughing. I was like, you didn't think I was gonna come. And he's like, oh, I knew you was gonna come, blah, blah, blah. And the rest was history. We dated for 1 year.
Yeah.
And he has this thing. This was even before he was a therapist. So he was working in HR and business at that time. And mm-hmm. so he had this thing that one of his mentors mentioned to him, is that before you get engaged to someone, you want to see them in every season. So you want to see them in the summer, the fall, the winter, you know, people's moods change. They, you know, different things happen. And so mm-hmm. even though he knew he wanted to get married, he was just like, I need to see you for one whole year. Let's see your consistency. And the same for me. And then when that year hit, we got engaged. And funny story, our engagement was super short. It was 30 days. And Sam planned the whole wedding.
Wow.
Now yes. here's the thing about this. What I tell any man, unless you are a wedding planner, to plan a wedding, absolutely not. You should never do it.
Yeah. You have some help though.
But I did have a ton of help. And the reason I did it, we had a conversation when we were dating and when we got engaged that it was this thing where she really didn't want a wedding. She was like, I can go to the courthouse and be fine. And I was like, what woman wants to not have a wedding? I was thinking this in my head, mm-hmm. but knowing her history, knowing that, you know, there are certain things that she was cool with, that she wasn't cool with. I was like, in the back of my mind, I said, I know you said that you don't want a wedding, but you will never like forget about this opportunity that you had to do something mm-hmm. where other people, including your family and your friends, recognize mm-hmm. what you do and how you are and celebrate this moment with you. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, this is something that's only gonna happen one time in your mm-hmm. lifetime. Mm-hmm. And so for her, you know, my thought process was, well, if we're gonna pull off this engagement and pull off this wedding, let me get going on. And just out of my administrative skills and all the things that I wanted to do, I wanted to make sure that that happened for her. Mm-hmm. And so I had a ton of help, you know. I called on her family, her friends, and people. I was like, listen, we need to pull this wedding off. And the wedding ended up being like 400.
It was like 450 people there.
Yeah.
All based off of like Facebook promotion.
Facebook promotion. Listen,
basically,
we were some event
2014, promoters. Like before all the fun things that Facebook has, no Instagram, none of that. But really, we had a YouTube channel
right
at the time, and so from there, it was just he did a really good job. I will say, when we got married, he had a full head of hair, and after the wedding, he had to go bald.
Listen that. Listen,
stressed them
that's,
out.
That stress, boy. You know, I had a smooth,
you did.
Smooth, like waves in a frohawk. It was smooth. Now I'm bald as a baby's body. So
you can't grow for nothing.
Man, listen, Harvey, I look like you, man.
So, you know,
I'm sorry, brother. But it's like, all good. I look like you, man. So now it was like, man. So, but you know, in it, I think that's what those things that we went through in our life, like even when we were, you know, in our engagement phase and getting married mm-hmm. that first year, like part of our love story is that we made a lot of decisions that mm-hmm. were challenging.
Yeah.
And we did a lot of things that were difficult. And in those moments of like, yeah, we're going to try this. We're going to do that. Mm-hmm. We're going to enjoy each other. We're going to figure it out. There's this piece that we had to learn. And that's part of our love story, which I'm sure we'll get to in a second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that in a long nutshell, that is our love story. So.
Okay. Wow. All right. So I appreciate you ripped right through. Yeah, you went. That was pretty fast. But let's pull back a little bit.
Sure.
So my first question, and we'll try to kind of go through.
Mm-hmm.
Sam, you said that you were looking for a wife.
Mm-hmm.
Do me a favor and elaborate on that. What did that mean to you?
What did it mean to
you? What were you looking for in a wife?
Yeah. So I think it's always important to provide context. When I was younger, right, I come from a two-parent home. That's not everybody's story, you know, but I came from a two-parent home where my mom was faithful to my dad like 30, 40 years, you know, and so watching for 30, 40 years how my mother, like, through ups and downs, through bad and good, like, supported him, not through any trauma or any abuse, but for the most part was there and was consistent. And I was like, man, like, I would love to have somebody that's consistent, because all I'm getting in my dating history is inconsistency from me and from the young ladies that I dated. And over time, it became to be really difficult for me in places where I was like, man, I'm always looking for my mom. Every boy, in many cases, does look for his mom. That's at least my thought process. But in many cases, you have to figure out what it means to find a woman, and a woman that meets you where you're at, not necessarily where you are going to become something. And I think that in that process, like, I knew where I was going. I knew what I desired and what I wanted for me personally. And for that, I was like, I need somebody to at least match me, at least meet me where I'm at, and us take off from there. And in that process, Harvey and Carice, like, I was in this time frame of like just wanting someone where I could share my life with. You know, I had a pretty good job at the time, You know, I was up and coming in my career. You know, I had a place to stay. You know, I got a whip. All the things that you'd be like, as a man, I got this, I got that, I got this. You know, I got all these things that I feel like I'm marking off my list. You know, that is this adage where, like, I think a lot of men be like, oh, men don't have lists. Yeah, you kind of do. You know, and I think that we have lists that are more cognitive and thought process than we do, say, per se, write it out. And I think in those moments, like, there's things that be like, man, I've done this, I've done that. You know, I'm out of royal, I sold my royals, all the things, but now it's time to settle down. And in that process of wanting to settle down and find someone that at least matched me, like, there was this desire to, you know, see somebody and be with somebody that I could be my entire life with and start my family. I think another point for me is that, you know, I always say this to my wife, I say, every man wants a legacy, mm-hmm. you know, and what do you want to leave once you leave? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I can't have a legacy unless I have a wife. And for me, like, having a legacy meant, like, okay, not only will I find someone that has values and morals and the things that I also agree with in terms of my beliefs, but someone who can challenge me and not leave me in a place where I'm just like, oh yeah, that's good enough. What are you aspiring towards? What are you pushing towards as a woman? What do you want? What do you desire? And in those things challenge me. And in that moment of being, you know, 20 some odd years old, not even 30 yet, I ain't even a grown man yet, right? Like in that time frame, like that maturity and seeing those things, you know, that my father did and that other men around me did, it was like this push to be, Sam, it's time to find a wife. It's time to find someone that can help you navigate, you know, and go further faster than where you could go by yourself. And for me, I think that process of finding a woman or finding a wife, that was the kind of the start for me to kind of look back, because based on what I've been through and also based off of what I really desire to go to next, not only in my personal life, but with someone to help them achieve their dreams as well. So that was really what, when I think about your question, that's really the context that kind of helped me go towards the process of finding the woman or finding the wife.
Good answer. Good answer.
That's life. That's real life.
All right. So you know what you're looking for. You guys get together after that first coffee date. So how does it work out? Because you know, Tova, you said you were moving. So did you guys do the long distance dating? Like, how did that work out?
Oh, so he stopped me in my tracks. What? He finally got me. And I think going along the lines of our first date, it was very, you know how sometimes your first dates can be very fluff? Like, oh,
that's nice.
It's nice. Let's catch up. Blah, blah, blah. We talked for hours on some deep stuff, like, what are your goals? Where are your, like, some of the stuff that people don't really get to like the fourth or fifth date. Me and my mindset, you know, as I was driving there, I was praying. I'm like, listen, God, I don't have time for the okie doke. Like, if this isn't going anywhere, if, you know, if he's just friend, a good friend, you know, because sometimes women have to understand every guy that you come in contact isn't meant to be your significant other. Or, you know, your husband. Sometimes these are just really good friends. And I'm like, okay, God, if, you know, if he's meant to be my friend, let me know off rip. Like, I don't want to lead him on. I don't want him to lead me. Just give me some signs and signals. And so the depth of our conversation kind of was like, okay, I can see where this is going. And so some things happened in Baltimore. I was like, okay, I didn't do it all for him, but I was just like, let me slow down, because in a sense, I was kind of running to Baltimore, you know, to get away from some things that I had experienced. But, you know, the more we talked, the more we dated, we just grew together. We learned so much, we matured so much, and it really helped me to heal in some places that I needed to be exposed and to identify. And he was very patient with me. And I think, I know for certain that he was God sent. And I'm so happy that I went on that coffee date on a Monday.
Yeah.
Because that day literally changed the trajectory of my life. And I'm forever grateful for that.
Yeah. And I think in it too, like, you did not make it easy for me at all.
Thanks, I was going to
say that. No, this is good. This is good. This is Love is Black.
Listen, so listen.
This means Love is Real, right? And so like in this real moment, like I think like you knew that you had been through several different mm-hmm. relationships, and I knew I had been through several different relationships where this were things that we didn't really necessarily want and yeah. don't want to participate in. And so in this moment, I think you knowing what you wanted at that time, mm-hmm. you wanted to get out of Michigan, mm-hmm. you wanted to expand your career, your education, mm-hmm. your desires, your goals, your dreams. And in that moment, like Tova kind of knew what she wanted. She was all head in, you know, she mm-hmm. was going away. And so for me to come in a moment where she was leaving, it's almost like, okay, here's this last blockade, mm-hmm. but also like, who are you? Mm-hmm. You know, what do you really want? What are you really after? Because the guys I'm used to are mm-hmm. whatever.
And I made a conscious decision to be sober-minded during mm-hmm. our dating process. Because, you know, Carice, as women, we have the tendency to get swept off our feet and jump right, like, after that good first date, you on Pinterest, pinning your wedding dress, and like, oh, this is it. Girl, calling all your friends, and, you know, just... And I was like, I have been there. I'm like, I'm not going there again. And so I kept saying, I am going to be in this relationship sober-minded. I'm not going to let him sweep me off my feet right now. Like, I need to make sure your word is your word, yeah. that you're consistent, yeah. that what you said in March is the same thing that you're doing in June. Like, I needed to be there mind, body, and spirit. And so I think that's where he's like, you made it hard for me. No, I just held you accountable to what you said you wanted mm-hmm. and what you wanted in a relationship. And so I think that was the piece. But once we got to what, the 6 month point, yeah. he set me down. He's like, listen, I'd have been through all your tests, all your hoops, met all your people, talked to your mentors, did everything.
Talk to your pastor.
I done did it all. Now I'm a good guy. You don't have to worry about me. If this ain't what you want, let me know. And at that moment, I was like, okay, boo, I want you. The guard is down. And then from there, it went super quick.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. It really did. But I think it's important that, like, you know, any guy or any gal that's looking for each other, like, you have to go through those moments, because those, whether they're tests or initiations or whatever you want to call them,
getting jumped,
you know what I'm saying? Like, whatever it is for your life, I think it's important, because those things, once you navigate, you get a chance to see the real true essence of a person. Mm-hmm. And in those essences, I would much rather, as a guy, know what I'm going to be experiencing, what I'm up against, what I gotta do, what's going on, if I really want to pursue her, really wanted her, and I did. And in that moment, like, I got a chance to see a lot of her, not all of her, but to see a lot of her, you know, during that time frame. And I'm appreciative that those things were in place for her.
I like that. Yep. So this brings me to when you, Sam, kind of 100% solidified in your mind, this is it. This is the one. I want to marry her. Mm-hmm. Is there a specific, you know, quality or trait that she has that really, you know, put that solid in your mind? Is there a specific day, something she did, something she might not even know that she did, like a phone call or something? Is there something that kind of solidified, yes, she the one?
I think the something was in that, at least that first initial couple of months, was me analyzing the total body of work. What I mean by that is, like, how do you think about things? How do you think about life? You know, getting a chance to meet her family, what that was like, you know, and understanding how she navigated that, how she treated her mom, you know, how did her mom treat her? Because how her mom treat her is probably how I'm gonna get treated too. You know what I'm saying? Like, all these different things, like also understanding, like, you know, what was her social circle like? Like, for me, it was like, okay, like, what kind of friends you got? Because your friends go off rap. See, like, who is this guy you talking to? And at the end of the day, they ended up being my advocates in a moment where, like, yo, why aren't you getting with him? Like, it's a good guy. And I appreciated that once she told me that. She's like, man, I thought they was going to give you a harder time. And I was like, well, I mean, you know, I'm real.
They did not. Nobody gave him smoke. Not nobody. Not my mama. Not my daddy. Nobody gave him smoke. You just know? Me. Just me.
Just her. And
somebody had to do it.
Listen, and for me, like, I think it was important to get to know those moments. That's why I say a total body of work. Mm-hmm. Not that you could ever, like, estimate, but because of the way that I'm built, which is analytical, which is very, like, left-minded, left-brained, you know, trying to figure out, like, what does this mean? How do I really get a chance to know you? I did a lot of those things, you know, went on vacation and talked to you and all those different things. And really for me, it began to be a clearer picture that like, yo, this is a whole lot better than what I have ever done and people I've ever dated. And I can truly be like, this is the person I really want to marry. I knew. And it's funny, she always brings this up to me. She said, how did you know? Like, and he'd be like, well, I just feel like it's a knowing, it's a feeling. Because I'm also very emotive, meaning emotional. And so in that moment, it was like, I knew that you were my wife. And you hear a lot of guys be like, yeah, I know, I just knew it, or whatever. And sometimes they're right, Harvey? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And in that moment of like, I just know, like to be able to explain that initially, sometimes it's a little difficult. But to get to that place where like over time, especially over the course of your years of marriage, there's this moment where the wife be like, oh, I understand why you say you knew that. Because that comes out in action. It comes out in deed. It comes out in the way that you treat me. It comes out in the way that you speak to me and communicate to me. That shows your knowing where you couldn't explain it then. You can explain it through your rationale of how you treat me and how you navigate issues with me now. And I think that knowing of like was very futuristic, but it also was in that place, me being like, if this is what God has for me or this is what I want to pursue, this is it for me. And I think that is what helped me kind of process, to answer your question, if that answered it, you know, that's what helped me kind of process to be like, yo, like this total body of work of what I've learned about you is key. And I think that, you know, this is an important phrase that this guy by the name of Jermone T. Glenn, he says, dating is information. Like you date collecting for information, data. Collecting at data, collecting information. Mm-hmm. And in collecting information and dating, like I did that. And collecting information during our engagement, I did that. And it helped me in understand and navigate things from, you know, thinking about it now, helped me understand how to really, you know, see who she was mm-hmm. and who, you know, she saw who I was as well. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So you're together. Did the wedding planning put a strain on that engagement, on that relationship while y'all planning this event? What were you like, bro, for like 30 days, you plan this out?
Listen, I don't know if it caused a strain on him. I didn't know. So literally, he proposed, my family was there. I'm sitting there crying, snotting. He gets back up on the mic. He's like, wait, I have another surprise. And I'm like, what? He's like, in 30 days, you're getting married. And I look at my mom, I look at everybody. My mom brings out my wedding dress because they were scheming. Like I went home for a thing and they were like, come on, let's go pick out wedding dresses. Cause you know, you know when you about to get engaged. And I'm just like, all right, y'all, let me appease y'all. Cause I'm an only child too. So that's another reason why I had a wedding is because my mom was like, you're my only child. I need this. Really, she was like, I need this. I was like, okay, mom. And so I was like, let me appease y'all. My cousin worked at a bridal store. She was gonna quit, but she held on so we can get the discount on the dress. Aww. Like all these people behind the scenes were just, my god sister's calling me like, yeah, I'm coming into town in June to see you. She was coming for the wedding, like all, so there was no strain with me because I did not know. Literally the church was booked. My bridesmaids was there. They had their dresses.
Had a lot of help, y'all. Tell me.
Listen, the cake. Yeah.
I think it wasn't just 30 days then, because you knew. It was
30 days.
Before then you proposed, and then you're like, okay, in 30 days, I already got XYZ set out.
Yeah. So we got engaged May 4th, mm-hmm. and our wedding day is June 8th. Mm-hmm. So literally at the point in which I found out, the only thing I had to do was pick a cake. So we didn't have a big reception. We had like a cake, punch, a sweet reception with like fruit, a fondue fountain, all of that.
Because I ran out of money. That's realistically. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was like, man, the phone is dry.
Yeah,
you know,
but a lot of people gave. Like, we got the church for free. So, like, a lot of things were gifted. So, really, the only thing I had to pick was a wedding flavor. The hairstylist was booked. The makeup artist was booked. Yeah.
Sam. Wow.
Bridal shower. My bridesmaids did the bridal shower.
Again, disclaimer. Guys, do not plan this.
Oh, I feel you. Don't do it.
My pastor tried to warn him. He was like, "Nah, Sam.
Don't do it.
Are you sure?"
Yes. In the sacrifice, just like when, you know, when the lion got thrown off by Scar, was the sacrifice was my hair. That was the only thing. And I appreciate that, you know, I lost my hair for a moment.
And I love your bald head.
Thank
boo.
You. Thank yeah. you. Yes, thank you.
But yeah, so there really was no strain. I think he was a little stressed. Now, in retrospect, when I think about it, his demeanor was a little different. But I mean, during our engagement, we didn't live together or nothing like that. So I don't know what you was going through late at night. You probably was.
I was lonely. I was burning. Burning with lust. Needed a.
I don't know. So, but yeah, he really, and literally ever since then, he has this precedent of, like, he's the great surpriser.
Yeah.
So that wedding has set the precedent of every birthday, every anniversary is the surprise. Like, I cannot outdo him in surprises. Yeah. So,
and I feel bad when I don't have one.
And I'm like, bro, you missed a prize
for yourself.
No, I shouldn't have did that.
I'm like, you, but, and I'm like, you don't have to. I'm like, you've been surprising me for 8 years straight. I don't need no more surprises. Just at this, he's like, you want to know? I'm like, yes, just tell me where we're going. You don't got, you have surprised me for a lifetime.
Good job.
Great job.
That's awesome. Okay, so wedding's over. Now you guys are living together, you're a married couple. Mm-hmm. What's changed? Has anything changed?
Yep, that first year, y'all. Let me tell you some things you should not do when you first get married. Point number one, when you first get married, do not shift jobs.
Listen.
Meaning do not change jobs, meaning do not quit your jobs.
Both of us quit our job.
Both. Would be B-O-F-F.
I don't know what we were thinking. As you could tell, we're people of faith, but that don't make you stupid. Like, I can't even put Jesus in the equation because he had nothing to do with this. We are both very purpose-filled people, and we're millennials too. Millennials have this saying, like, a millennial will quit a job in a minute.
Yes.
That is, yep. If that was a picture,
That was us.
So he had a great paying job,
sure did.
Upper management for a Fortune 500 company. And it was just stress. I think soon after our wedding, my father passed away. And the day of the funeral, this company he was working for was having a grand opening. And he was in charge of, like, everything.
A lot.
And he was like, I can't be there. Like, my wife's father, not her cousin, not her uncle, her father passed away. Once again, I'm my only child. Like, I can't be here. And they were upset. And so that, like, triggered, like, if I'm gonna be married, my family work-life balance gotta be better. I'm stressed. Yeah. Like, so he had a good reason to let it go. Me, I was just like, I don't wanna do this job anymore. I'm not working in purpose. I can't. God will fix it, y'all.
Man, God did not fix it.
Financially, do you hear me? Year one, we almost didn't make it.
Listen, can I tell the story?
Go ahead.
Listen, here we go. Story time with Sam and Tony.
Oh my God.
You know, story time. Listen, we in the apartment, like, and we went through it, stressed, quit jobs, like, where we going, when we gonna make our next ends meet. And, you know, when you have your high octane emotions and cognitive and mental status is just firing and you mad at the world, there's moments where you just should not have conversations. And in this moment, we had, you know, some very sparky conversations. Mm-hmm. And you know, I just remember my wife leaving out, And I didn't even recognize that she left out the door. I was just like, I'm about to watch this TV. I'm watching this game. LeBron listen, James,
you know, I like, walked I'm out the house. I walked out the house with no phone, so he couldn't call me. Listen. I left the key, so he didn't know how I left. And he looked up and was like, wait, I can't call her? I don't.
I sure did.
This man put on some hoop shorts and a church coat.
And some, ashy legs.
And ashy legs and was walking the block looking for
me. I sure did.
Like, he was like, where is my wife? Like, I was pissed. Yeah. I don't even know. Like, we lived by Walmart. Yeah. So I just went on over there and was walking for hours. And when I came out of the... of the store, I seen this big old black man with a church coat, some hoop shorts, and I'm like, is that Sam?
In the dead of winter, right?
In the dead of winter, and yeah. All I could do was laugh. I'm like, yo, we have hit rock bottom. You out here in a church coat.
Looking like Dave Chappelle.
Looking like, you looking like Mr. Brown with your ashy knees, church coat, hoop shorts.
Listen.
But at that moment, y'all, I think we realized the importance of our words in a heated argument. We realize the impact of leaving and just walking out with things unsaid.
Yeah.
And I think that was a pivotal turning point for our communication. Mm-hmm.
1 year in.
1 year. It wasn't even one. Yeah. It was like 3 months.
3 months in.
And right. It was just like, so our first year was a lot of financial hardship because of the decision that we made. And honestly, those decisions took us about 3 years to like come back from. Mm-hmm. And so for the first 3 years, we were trying to.
Yeah, listen, it was a Rick Ross song,
yeah.
Hustle.
Yeah.
Hustle Hard. And I remember, listen, working like a Jamaican. Like, literally. I had like 4 jobs, even though it was no chill mom.
No.
And it was, you know, working
a lot. You worked the third shift. Third you worked shift, for shift, school. You shift. Had a side job. Like it was a season. And so but that's where we came into the business of marriage. We took on our entrepreneurial journey. And so a lot of times, you know, when you find purpose, sometimes it comes out of a struggle. And so we did a couple of businesses, and that's kind of where our entrepreneurial journey kicked off. In the same instance, he changed careers. He went from HR to counseling. Where he is now. And so even though that season was super hard, mm-hmm. it really cultivated us for the next level of our marriage. And so that was like the first three. And then I would say like the rest was us trying to have a baby. So we struggled with fertility for infertility. Yes, for a long time. And so people around us was having kids, and you know, that was another sore spot for us. And literally it took us six years to conceive. And so then last year, 2020, we finally had our daughter. So that was another phase of our marriage, was, you know, testing with that, just our level of hurt and, you know, pregnancy tests not coming out and just health issues. It was just a lot. So that was another, I think, trying time for our marriage, was trying to have children.
Yeah. And I think in that, like, there's like a lot there. I'm sure for a lot of people who are in moments where there are things that they struggle with, you know, that they navigate in their life, and they're trying to figure out, like, am I alone in this? And it sometimes feels very isolating, not being able to have a kid. You're like, is it you? Is it me? You know, then you go to your doctor, and you might spend a whole lot of money, or you might spend no money because you don't believe in the doctors, and all these different things that are happening. And in that moment, you're having to deal again with all this stress. You're dealing with your family that's like, oh, we're young. I know y'all about to be. Did y'all get married early because y'all about to have a baby?
That all was the thing, too. All yes. Things, y'all got married in 30 days. You pregnant.
Like... And we couldn't have a kid for a long time. And then so in those things, I feel for, you know, men and women who are navigating some stress, whether it's financial, whether it's a baby, whether it's trust, you know, all the things, maybe hurt or trauma from a relationship, all those things that happen to individuals who first get married. You have this dream, this desire, or maybe you have no dream at all. And you just like, I just want to have somebody.
Yeah.
And in those moments, once you finally do get married, things that hit you, And you're like, man, this ain't all it's copped up to be. So what is this thing actually about? And I think for us, over time, even though we both kind of knew what we wanted once we got there, mm-hmm. it was a thing of like, how could we face these things based off of how we were prepared or prepared ourselves in a sense? Mm-hmm. And so the shock and awe of that and just navigating those things over the years kind of have grown us and matured us to be where we are now, even probably faster than sometimes 14, 15, 16 year old marriages get to those places. And eventually like, oh, it's 21 years. And I looked up and life has passed us by mm-hmm. and nothing's happened. Where for us, life happened quickly. Very quickly, very quickly. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're a couple, that first year's a struggle. You finally have the baby. How does that change the marriage? What's that like? Because these milestones you're hitting. So now the baby comes in and like you've been praying for this baby. You finally get what you want. Mm-hmm. What happens then?
COVID-19.
Yep. 2020.
We had our baby in 2020, February 19th, 2020. And then we all know the lockdown happened in March. So I barely missed having my baby in the pandemic. So right after the pediatrician was called, like, you can't have people come over, you know, it's like this flu-like thing going around. So I'm 2 hours away from my mom, my family. Then, you know, you got your postpartum hormone thing going on. You already feel like I need to get away. I need to get out. But the world is shut down.
No summer.
So no summer, no first Mother's Day, no holidays. If it wasn't for FaceTime, my mother would have missed the whole first year of her only granddaughter's life. So it was a very, very difficult season because as a new mom, number one, you're trying to adjust to life just period. But then you're adjusting to life when it's abnormal on top of you coming into something new. So I think that season put a strain too, because my husband's like, now who is this? I have to learn you as a wife and a mom in a pandemic with some, I'm a counselor, so I can see the signs of you.
But
you know,
but here's a caveat to this counseling mental health piece. I think this is an important thing. I would tell any therapist mm-hmm. this. You cannot counsel therapize your spouse.
Heck no.
In fact, when you get to that place where you try, you're going to be even more confused.
Facts.
Because you're sitting there trying to be like, well, what's going on with my spouse? I can help figure out and help the world, but I can't figure out how to help my spouse.
And I'm looking at him like, you the counselor. What is wrong with me? What is the problem here? And you know, it was, I think, and for him, he's like, babe, let's get you back to the things that you love. But I can't. I can't go to the mall. I can't go to the movies. I can't go to the spa. I can't get my nails done, eyebrows done. Like, it was just a whole new meaning. And I think mm-hmm. the great part about it was that for 1 year, literally, because she just started going to daycare when she turned one. So February of this year, was that we were able to parent her. So we both work outside the home. And you know, the day that the shutdown happened, I was set to go back to work. And you know, we had the opportunity to see her first, hear her first words and see her first, the things that we would have missed. Because we would have been working and busy and all of our regular smegler stuff, we were able to really hone in on her and really learn our child. So that was the blessing. But as far as our marriage, I think we had to learn who we were all over again.
All over again.
In the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of becoming parents, we had no other choice but to sit up in his house and be like, listen.
Yeah.
Let's figure it out.
Yeah. And I think that's on top of, you know, what I say with marriages is most marriages go through 7 year cycles, mm-hmm. you know, 7, 14, 15, 21, 28, and so on and so forth. And in those cycles of marriage, like we're going through a cycle mm-hmm. on top of a pandemic, mm-hmm. on top of having a child, mm-hmm. you know, all this irregularity. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, those things can cause you to be like, well, who the heck am I? and who the heck are you in mm-hmm. this moment? Mm-hmm. And I think that spending that time, sometimes not saying nothing mm-hmm. and being in the presence of each other, but also spending that time to be like, yo, let's start to navigate this mm-hmm. because we cannot lose what we have mm-hmm. and or we have to mature and grow mm-hmm. in another way, in another mm-hmm. shape to actually grow and learn each other. And so mm-hmm. I think that those moments that are just recent still in mm-hmm. a sense, in the aspect of the frontal lobe of my brain, like they're right here and they're helping us grow and understand mm-hmm. each other even to this point.
And I think our communication yeah. got better too. Yeah. I think things that we would have naturally held in, like, you know, I'm not gonna say it. I'll wake up, go to work tomorrow, it'll be over. I wake up.
I'm gonna see
you all day tomorrow. You're gonna be downstairs, I'm gonna be upstairs. We're gonna all be in the same space. Right. And so we were able to have the hard conversations without being offended. Mm-hmm. Sometimes somebody was offended, but we set through that and talk through it because you can't go nowhere. I mean, you can walk around the block, but that's it. So it really helped our communication mm-hmm. and to really be able to have those hard conversations that we would have probably brushed off if mm-hmm. we had an outlet, you know, to go to. And so, yeah, it was another milestone, another shakeup, yeah. but another great learning experience for our marriage.
Yeah, and I'll add to this. Like, I think one thing that we grew and learned in this time frame, I really recognize that personality impacts marriage as well, because you have, you know, my wife who's very if you ever have taken the DISC assessment, she's a DI, you know, very direct, you know, and I'm an SC, so I'm like, let's make it work all together. I'm very conscientious, all those different things. And you can go through all the personality assessments you want to, but like for us, understanding and growing to learn each other's personality also helped us understand how we kind of communicate it. Mm-hmm. And also in the aspect of how we communicate, what's her strengths? What are her areas of growth and opportunity? What are my strengths? What are my areas of growth and opportunity, and navigating those things, even taking things to kind of figure out what those things mm-hmm. are, like it kind of helped us understand how we can communicate better. Mm-hmm. And in learning how to communicate better, then it's not like, oh, you're attacking me. No, yes, this is how you share information. And in that same way of understanding how she shares information, it then helped me be like, oh, maybe that's an area I need to actually step up in, not only in our marriage, but in other places of my life as well. And I think that those things really helped me and her grow in a place and be like, you know what, like I'm starting to understand now how I need to become more direct in certain things that I want and need, but also how maybe in her manner, how she expresses and shares certain things maybe needs to come across less
harsh.
Right. Less in a way that says, dang, I mean, I'm your husband. I'm not your enemy.
But it's not, and he had to learn that it's not that. Exactly. It's just how I speak. I'm exactly. very direct. Very. And so we had to, but I will say during this pandemic, you have become very direct. I'd be like, ooh.
Yep.
Okay.
I'm like, listen, this, what I said is what I said.
He's like, this is what I want. I'm like,
I said what I said.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
You know? But I think in those moments, that's just growth. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you married for a while, you start being like, all right, I can let my guard down, right? I can be honest. And I think that just comes with time.
Yeah. And then as time comes, it comes with trust too, because you know that what I'm saying is not to intentionally hurt you. Exactly. And I know what you're telling me is not to hurt me. Like we love each other. So
you have my best
interest. You have my best interest at heart.
Bro. Yep. For sure.
I love that. That's really good to keep in mind, I think, during an argument, that the other person is not trying to hurt you, that it might just be something that's coming across, you know, a bit direct. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would have laughed as hard about that. I said what I said if that wasn't like one of your lines. Like, I feel like I hear that all the time. It's like, I said what I said. And I'm like, oh my, I hear you. I get it.
I get it.
I was hoping there's some like underlying meaning, like, you know, something for me to decode. Like, no, I said what I said. Okay, I get it. But that's good. I had a question about the baby. Oh, so during the pandemic, you know what I find very interesting outside of the pandemic, actually, while you're raising a baby, your parenting styles, I feel like you learn a lot. Like you may have the conversation about how you would like to raise a child, but then you get the child and you're like, oh, everything's kind of different. Like this is like a human person. Like this, I could really mess this up. Then not only that, like they could really mess this up too, looking at your spouse. Like, hold up, I don't think I want you to do this, that, or the next thing. And then it turns into like clashing ideas when you thought you were on the same page. Did you guys have any of that?
You know what? I think the reality hits. So carrying my daughter, I'm not gonna play this. I'm not like when I see something, I'm gonna nip it in the bud. I'm not, I'm the softy, and he's more of the what did daddy say? But and I'm like, oh my God. No. And so I think that was the thing that like
shocked
me. Cause I'm like, right. I'm like, oh no, she ain't gone. And it was my, especially with a little girl, like I just knew, like it was like, mommy's going to be the disciplinarian. Daddy's going to just, and now don't get me wrong. She melts them like butter. And he's, but when it comes to like discipline, like this is what it is. It was the reverse. Like I was shocked. So, but I think as far as our parenting, like what we believe and what we see in our style, they're pretty much the same.
Yeah. For the most part. And I think that here's where, again, context, you hear me say this word so much. But like context is like, you got to think about our family histories. Our family histories are very similar, you know, like parents were like grandparents, parents were preachers type of thing, you know, mm-hmm. raising the pews, all these different things. And so being from a religious background mm-hmm. or religious families, we saw certain things that was like, okay, this is how you, what you do and you don't do in regards to how you raise a family based on that context. And so similarity was there in terms of how we would potentially raise our child. But also what's funny though, and what she was just mentioning with the discipline thing, whether it's like, hey, don't do that, or, you know, don't hit mommy or daddy, that's not right, all those different types of things. It's funny because like my father was like a huge disciplinarian, like obedience is the way to God, like for, you know what I'm saying, type of thing and all that. And yet for her mom was the disciplinarian for her. But I think in it, how it turned out so far, and I say caveat so far, is just the piece of like, I wanted to make sure that my wife knew that I wasn't gonna just leave it to her. Because I think in certain families, you'd be like, well, I don't want to be the bad guy. You know, I don't want to be the bad lady, whatever you want to call it. And in that moment, it's also like, well, how can I best support my spouse? Mm-hmm. And in that moment, like, of us figuring this out, like, this isn't figured out. This is mm-hmm. us living real life.
She just 15 months.
Right. She had, there now, you know, I don't got the... I don't got the book on this, right. Y'all, right? So
real new.
So like in that matter of it, like navigating it, it's just a piece of, okay, how can I best support her? Mm-hmm. And in that, that means like, okay, sometimes that means, hey, daddy's got to raise his voice just a taste to be like, honey, do you understand what mommy or daddy is saying? And if not, like, let's show you, let's talk, let's figure out in your baby language how to talk it out. Like, hand signs, more, less, you know, all the things that you have to do to help them understand, you do that and not let her feel like she's got to do it by herself. Because no parent wants to parent alone. Right. That's real.
Or
realness.
No parent wants to be the bad parent. Like, exactly. I'm calling your daddy because you blah, 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 blah.
Why you got
to
call?
No. And you scared of daddy because every time daddy is called, it's because you in trouble. So
exactly.
I think that just kind of balancing that out is what we're learning to do.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take a slight left turn because I'm interested to hear what your thought is on this. Last few couples that we've spoken to, this came up and I'm interested to hear what all couples think. We had one couple that we spoke to and one of them grew up in a house where his parents never argued, ever, in front, ever. He said it. He never saw them argue. So... okay, sounded strange. We spoke to another couple and the wife was like, my kids, because we were pretty similar, we didn't argue. Our kids didn't know how to deal with conflict because they never saw it. Because everybody's happy or whatever, nothing ever happened, no conflict in front of them. So my question to you, and what I mentioned to that first gentleman is, I understand you don't want, you never saw it. So it manifested with him that he didn't want to argue in front of his kid because he grew up without it and he didn't want to do that in front of his kid. I was like, that's nice, but do you think it's a good idea to have some conflict in front of them? So that they see that conflict can occur, mm-hmm. but nothing crazy happens. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they can see that conflict can be resolved. Mm-hmm. So my question to you, and I guess, Sam, because you're a counselor, I'm not sure if you do with kids or marriage or anything, but what do you think in terms of conflict in front of, and obviously 15 months, she's not paying attention to this yet.
At all.
But what do you think in terms of conflict resolution in front of your children?
This is a great discussion. So, you know, in Harvey, you gotta, I don't have no preparation for this topic, right?
I got you.
At all, right? So in conflict, I think this is my, I won't give you my counselor adage. I'll just give you my personal thought process about it. The personal thought process about it is that in conflict, number one, once you decide beforehand, in the realm of marriage, what you're going to do and how you're going to navigate it. Let that be the place of agreement, first off. Well, how are you going to navigate conversations that get heated? Mm-hmm. How are you going to navigate certain things that when it's unpronounced to you, something gets heated and you got to have a talk about it? Number one, I think you should navigate that first when you're married. It should already have been to be a discussion. Hey, when we get into something we don't agree about, how are we going to position ourselves to do this when we do it, even before kids?
And that goes to us too, because mm-hmm. we have disagreements, mm-hmm. but we don't yell. So I can honestly say I've never heard Sam Race's voice. I don't even know what it sounds like.
It's scary.
I don't know. If to this day, if he was to like yell at me, I would probably just, as direct and strong as I am, I would probably be taken aback. Like I would probably burst into tears. Now me, I don't scream at him, but as I'm talking now,
it's raised voice.
I'm a loud talker.
It's a raised one.
I'm a loud talker, but I look foolish yelling at someone who doesn't yell. Like it's just his demeanor. He doesn't yell, but we do have disagreements. Exactly. So I think a lot of times parents, like I don't have arguments in front of my children. They're talking about the yelling matches, which I agree. I don't think you should have that, but I do agree mm-hmm. that your child should see how
to navigate conflict.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's where it goes back to, you mm-hmm. have to decide first how we argue how we mm-hmm. have disagreements, mm-hmm. because I do say if y'all gonna yell, don't bring the babies. They're gonna be traumatized. They're gonna be crying. They, you know, but they do need to see you disagree.
Yeah. And
I think,
and how you disagree.
Yeah.
And that's why I start with that adage of like, okay, first off, there needs to be some type of discussion before you even get there. But I say that to set up this conversation. Conversation has to be when you get to that place, when you are heated, you have at least some type of methodology in place of how you're going to disagree. And when you do it, you do it. At least you always have a place to be. This is where we're going to start. And this is where we're going to end. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, like we don't have an ending point. And it's just an endless argument or endless conversation based off of what you want and what I want and what we're not getting met in terms of our needs and wants. Like, how does that sound and look like to your child? In a sense, I'm making this very an analytical conversation because it is one. And I think that not enough marriages have the analytical conversation of how are we gonna navigate something when we disagree? Because if we can't explain it to our child, you know, we haven't even talked about it. How can we explain it to ourselves? Mm-hmm. And I think that in that manner of having a conversation, not that again, it's all worked out, but I'm just giving you the real, like if you want to have a conversation in front of your kid about something to show them something in that moment, you ain't thinking about teaching your child nothing. You're trying to get through the issue, the problem, the situation, mm-hmm. because you're mad, angry, upset, mm-hmm. or disappointed about something that's happening between you and your spouse. Mm-hmm. And so in that manner, now I'm switching back to counselor mode, like in that manner, like it's this conversation where like, okay, if we can figure out, number one, let's set the precedence for how we talk and how we navigate things. At least if we have a precedence and we act on it and do it, then when we have the conversation and it happens in front of a child who has no ideology of how to figure out what's going on, they just see your emotional side, they just see your behaviors, they see you acting how you gonna act. And so that sets a precedence for them of how they would act when they feel a certain type of emotion in their heart, in their brain, in their body,
yeah.
You know?
And I will say too, sometimes stuff happens. Sometimes the stuff that we just, the rules, the precedents, all that go out the window sometimes.
It does.
But you have to be prepared if your child is in the room to come back and have that conversation if they can comprehend. You
better talk about it.
Because I've been a child of seeing your parents argue and I'm just like, what just happened? But just know as parents, if you know y'all just jack up all y'all rules and all violations, whatever y'all want to say, be ready to have that conversation with your children. So like, mommy and daddy, we messed up, we're yelling. Cause remember we teaching our kids, don't yell, don't hit, don't fight, you know? So they're like, wait, you just yell, the same thing. You just, you know? Cause they like, show me, don't tell me, show me what to do. You have to be able to come back and sit down and kids know you faking too. So if y'all still mad at each other and y'all come to sit on the couch, like, we sorry, we all right. We all right now. We love each other. We okay. And y'all, daddy don't want to look at mommy. Y'all sitting this far apart.
You didn't explain nothing.
You didn't explain nothing. You're saying stuff, but your actions aren't. So if that happens, just when you come back together, make sure y'all have flushed out whatever that was. So when you sit with your children to explain, like, hey, this wasn't cool. We lost our temper. We had to talk about it. We sat down that we apologize to you for raising our voice, just so they can see that, yep, sometimes things get heated, you know, but we're okay. We still love each other. Just have those conversations. Now, y'all can't do that every single argument though, because that after that, the kids were like, okay,
y'all
just do this every day. Don't even keep sitting me down no more. But that's why having those rules and practicing your disagreement is important, because you don't want to portray a false, you know.
And especially for them when they become adults and get married, if they choose to get married or have relationships, because you're setting the precedence, whether you think you are or not, for their future thoughts or ideas about the person that they may like, whatever that is. And so I think that in it, you're sowing a seed. And so at the end of the day, if we just go, you know, go all the way back about the question, it's like, the question for me is, what kind of seed do you want to sow for your child? In regards to communication, in regards to conflict, in regards to whatever it is, what kind of precedence do you want to set, and what do you hope for them to grow and to learn? And you can answer the question based off of what you think.
Because I believe want them to be good communicators, and disagreeing is a part of communication. Healthy disagreement is a part of communication. It's not always aggressive. Sometimes you just disagree. This is why I don't agree.
Point blank, period.
Period.
The reason this is such an interesting thing to me is we're talking about marriage, obviously. So that's just a relationship. Your color is not, your race, whatever, is really not the focus. It's just marriage to start with. But then you add in the fact that we're Black. I have three daughters. It is imperative to me that my daughters and my son too see me and mom disagree, argue, whatever. And then when it's over, it wasn't a knockdown drag out. It was a disagreement and we handled it. Because Sam, as fathers, one, Black fathers, we are just demystified. There's just this kind of idea that we're not around. But two, Black men in general, there's just a perception about us. And the last thing I want my daughters to think is that this Black man is gonna do anything. They should be in a house where mom was safe, was mom could yell, scream, whatever, be upset. And that's where it went. Not that that happens.
Okay.
I'm not
saying, why is mom yelling?
What I'm saying is that it was a safe space for you to, I mean, as a perfect husband, you've never had to. So when it comes, you like that? Slip that. I just like the idea. To me, while the whole marriage part was a big thing, to me, the social aspect of it too, because mm-hmm. you're right, this is the seed. In mm-hmm. 10, 15, 20 years, when our daughters mm-hmm. get married in a relationship, they should know that conflict is resolved maturely yeah. and not with violence and not with anything extra. And they should be able to trust the Black man
yeah.
to be in a relationship with. Yeah. So that was always something that I thought was interesting.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, they're marrying a character, and their character that they're ending up to, they're ending up choosing to marry, in many cases is either gonna be like, I don't want him to be like my dad, especially if it's the late young lady, I don't want him to be like my dad, or I want him to be more like my dad. Mm-hmm. And that character is the precedence that we end up setting for them all those years before. Mm-hmm. And so I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's good.
I like that. Marrying a character. Okay.
I do agree. That's good.
I've been taking notes this whole time.
Yes. The pen has been working. You know, we learning.
Listen, we learned it too. That's all we do.
This season has been great because we've spoken to a lot of couples and we picked up little bits from everybody.
Yeah.
So, and obviously this has been great. And as a counselor, obviously you dropping gems on us too. So we appreciate it, Sam. So
for sure.
So as we wind down here, I always have a question for couples. And so far, it's been interesting. You guys met as separate people. Mm-hmm. You got together. You're a couple.
Mm-hmm.
For each of you, what do you think? Why are you a better person because of this marriage? Is there a characteristic that this each person kind of got out of you that made you a better Sam, that made you a better Tova? Each of you take a moment and kind of consider that.
Listen. This marriage has taught me discipline in areas that I was lacking, AKA financially. Because as you have heard, he is very analytical. And so coming into a marriage, separate people with different spending habits and all that good stuff, Mr. Jones is like, you need to reel it in, sis. And so now I'm sitting here looking at my budget like, oh my goodness, like I can't, and I'm like, who is this person? But even still, I think this marriage also has helped me appreciate accountability. I think that's one of the best things about being married is that you have a constant accountability partner, somebody to hold you accountable that has your best interest at heart. You can hide and lie to the world, but when you come home to your spouse, they see you naked and unashamed, afraid, vulnerable. And then there is accountability there that I value because I know he loves me and I know he has my best interest at heart. And so when he holds me accountable in areas that I know that I need to be held accountable and some areas that I don't, I can take his words of wisdom and knowledge and love and say, sometimes I'm a little upset because I'm like, you ain't had to go there, bro. But I'm like, I know you have my best interest at heart. Also, this marriage has made me grow spiritually. I ain't never prayed as much as a wife and a mother, you know, than I have being single. And it has kept my relationship with God very strong. And overall, I tell him all the time, I'm like, I can't even picture myself not married no more. Like, I can't even think about me being single anymore. Could be because it's been 7 years, a long time, but I'm just like, I can't even see my life without you, period.
Aww.
Oh,
I know. I wanted to push the all button.
But I'm just like, I cannot. Our marriage has totally changed the trajectory of my life, and I can't see myself with anyone else. Even if I tried, I can't. Yeah. I can't see it.
Yeah. For me, and I appreciate that, babe, because that means a lot. That means a lot. For me, I would say marriage, and especially marrying my wife, Tova, has been freeing. I think for me, and you probably haven't heard me say this before, it's been freeing because I think I was alone and single, alone and afraid. you know, I was very tightly wound. You know, I was like, you know, I look at the career I was in. You know, I was like, HR, I got to be this way, follow rules, regulations, all the things, black and white. right? Adding Tova to, you know, marrying her has added such a gray area and unlocked such creativity and free spirit in me that I did not know existed. And when I got married, it's almost like through this marriage, it's like, oh, like there's freedom in life now to explore the great unknown, to start a business, mm-hmm. to unlock all the things that, you know, your parents was teaching, and to figure out like, oh, like there's more to life than just this black and white job, come home, routine. And I still do a lot of those things, mm-hmm. but in routine, now I can be unroutine and enjoy. I can come home and be free in my own place. I can go out and go on vacation and plan amazing things and do these things with someone that I love and enjoy. And in those moments, like I now see that being married with Tova has been so much more freeing for me and enjoyable in places where I didn't see enjoyment and freedom before.
Okay. I like that.
I love it.
I love it. So first, I appreciate you guys telling us your love story. It's beautiful. It's always good to hear. You know, because marriage isn't perfect. Relationships aren't perfect. There's ups and downs, but this is what makes the essence of a good marriage strong. It's the stuff you deal with. It's the stuff in the trenches, the stuff that you had to deal with, and you dealt with it together and you came out better for it. And that's the emotional part. Mm-hmm. But your podcast is the business of marriage. Mm-hmm. So if you can, give us some of that. Talk to us about the business of marriage and how you guys talk about that. Give us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So like we stated before, in the trenches, pieces of them, we started our entrepreneurial journey. So our very first entrepreneurial journey together, we made t-shirts.
T-shirt business.
I feel like that's the first thing people kind of dibble in is t-shirts. We did pretty good with that. Then I opened up a plus size clothing boutique, which was really birthed out of a place where we didn't have no money. And you know, it would take money to make money. And what little money we had, Sam was like, go ahead, let's invest it. And I was able to do a lot with that business. It went great. From there, we opened up a storefront in downtown Grand Rapids where we were. It was called the Pop-Up Shop GR, where we were able to provide space for other makers to rent our space, basically, and have short-term leases. And so that was a great experience. Worked with over 200 pop-up shop makers. We had it for 2 years. It was just a really good experience. He opened up his own counseling service, still going strong. In the midst of all that, we learned that twofold, when you go into business with your spouse, it's a whole nother ball game. You're talking about purpose, discipline, finances, communal goals. Like, we had to really navigate that area of life as far as being entrepreneurs, not bringing your work home and being able to separate from your work and your job. And when we owned the pop-up shop, we actually lived in the space. So it was like a live workspace. So it was kind of hard to take work.
You can't take it nowhere. It's right there.
It's right there.
On the other side of the door.
On the other side of the door. And so that was another dynamic. And then being able to say, hey, babe, you know, I've had all these businesses, ideas. Let's just focus on you. Let me be your cheerleader. And talking about the different seasons of business and how at one point it could be both of us, but at one point it needs to just be one. Let's all just focus all of our energy, money, finances into one communal goal. And then from that, you look at business and marriage. Marriage sometimes should be ran as a business as far as communication and finances and just your daily routine. Sometimes one of my friends says marriage is the biggest and best business acquisition ever created. When you get into a relationship and you get married, you sign a contract. There's a doing business ass for the women. You change your name. It's a whole legal binding business that happens. It ain't all just about love, but there is some business things mm-hmm. to marriage as well. And so we just talk a little bit about that. And we like to say the business of marriage is about all things love, all things life, and all things business. And so we kind of dibble in all of that on the podcast.
Yeah. I love it. Mm-hmm. So while we're talking about that and what you're doing now, is there anything else that, you know, our listeners might be able to find you on, to follow you? Here's your open opportunity, self-promote.
Well, right now we are on a hiatus, our season hiatus from our podcast. So you can go check. Yeah, you could go check us out on Apple, on Google, on Spotify. It's The Business with a Z. So it's The Business, B-I-Z-N-E-S-S, of marriage. And you can catch up on all the episodes. We our last episode just aired, 2 weeks ago? Mm-hmm. And so we'll be back in the fall. And so just go and catch up, learn a little bit about us. We talked about some pop culture stuff and
talked about marriage and mortgage.
Marriages and mortgages, mm-hmm. kids, all kind of stuff. So all types of stuff. Just go and check us out. And then on Instagram.
You can find Tova
at
Tova Jones. Lord.
Y'all, episode I gave my email address. I was like, that is not. It's Tova Jones on Instagram. Right.
And you can choose to follow me at SamJones0608, but I don't be on there. Listen, if you want to catch me, schedule a counseling session at the Wisdom Center Counseling Services in Grand Rapids, Michigan. You can reach Samuel Jones and the Wisdom. Wisdom is the principal thing. You know, you can do all of that, you know, at the Wisdom Center. That's my radio voice. So anyway. But that's where you can reach us and check us out. All of our podcasts, even some things for marriage folk, married folk, and just other information. I'm also the Bruz, which means I'm a proud member of Omega Sci-Fi Fraternity Incorporated. And you can find that all type of information on my website at theprinciplething.com. And that's PRINCIPLE.com. So yeah, that's us.
Nice. Well, thank you for sharing all that. We're going to put that information into the show notes so that people just one click and then they'll find you. But I want to thank you immensely for your time, for your story, for your wisdom, for sharing and just feeding us with all of your knowledge. I loved it.
Yeah, thank you for having it.
I appreciate y'all.
I love this concept. Yeah. We need to hear more Black love stories, okay? Because it's not enough. It's plenty out there, but we don't hear them, you know? And so I'm just grateful that you even found us and asked us to come and be a part. So yes. Thank you so much.
Love is Black, y'all.
Yes.
Yes.
No doubt.
Yes.
So thank you very much for doing this. This was good, educational, informational. I feel like we're better for it. So another great episode. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, well, Harvey, I think that we've gotten a whole lot of information. I think that, you know, there's been a few different consistent themes, but they all kind of round out to one. So all of the planning and the navigation and the analytics, I think all of that, if you were to really wrap that up into one, you would come back to how they so eloquently put it: love is business. Love is many things.
But this good love is Black.
Thanks for listening to the Love is Black podcast.
Please help support the podcast by subscribing and leaving a review.
And connect with us on Facebook and Instagram at Love is Black Podcast.
See you next week.